Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, and we're recording from Parliament where we've had the speakership election. But we also have a general election campaign which hasn't quite got off to its official start. That happens when Parliament is dissolved on Wednesday. But we're beginning to see the various themes that we're going to be hearing from both main parties, as well as the Liberal Democrats and the Brexit Party. And James, we've had a few polls over the weekend. How do things look?
So on the one hand, the Tories are ahead. But I think one of the things that is causing nervousness among Tory cabinet ministers and Tory MPs is that both main parties are gaining. Now, you might say, oh, why does that matter to the Tories? As long as their lead is staying constant, why do they care about the fact Labour are doing better? Their worry is this, is their whole strategy essentially depends on the Lib Dems taking a chunk out of that Labour vote. And what seems to have happened quite early in this campaign is that the two main parties are beginning to squeeze the minor parties. Now, the worry about this for the Tories is that they have already squeezed the Brexit Party a lot more than Labour have squeezed the Liberal Democrats. And so I think a concern for the Tories is that if you end up with Remain supporting voters voting tactically for the candidate most likely to secure a second referendum, and you end up with them doing that in large numbers, the Tories will not win a majority. They need the Lib Dems to do well and that Remain vote to remain split. So I think this election turning into a two-party contest is beginning to cause some concern on the Tory side.
There is still a lot to play for. There's a lot of days left.
We're only 2 days.
Yeah, and many days left in this campaign. And, for example, we have the Liberal Democrats launch tomorrow morning, where Joe Swinson will be speaking. So they will have a chance to get back on the front foot. But one of the things here, James, and it's something you wrote about in your Sun column at the weekend, is ultimately the issue of TV debates. Now, ITV have plans for a Boris Johnson versus Jeremy Corbyn debate. Sky today have suggested that they want to have a three-person debate with Joe Swinson, Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson. I can see why Labour aren't particularly keen on including Joe Swinson in that. But given what you've just said about the sense of this becoming a two-party election, surely it will be in the Tories' interest to get Joe Swinson in there.
Yeah, you may well say that. And that is something that certainly some Tories think that they need. But one of the other aspects of this campaign is the Tories playing defence in seats like Cheltenham, Winchester, Watford, from the Liberal Democrats. And I think one of the ways they think they keep those seats is to say to Tory Lib Dem waverers there, you know, the election is about who you want as Prime Minister, Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn. Boris Johnson has, at the last time I looked at this, which was last week, a 23-point lead on that question with YouGov. And they think that if they can keep going on that, then they can win the election. Someone was making an interesting point to me today that in the Australian election campaign, Scott Morrison, now the relevance of this is the Australian election campaign, one of the principal people running the Liberal campaign in Australia, which is the Conservative Party of Australia, was Isaac Levito, who is running the Tory effort. And that Scott Morrison had this big lead over Bill Shorten, who would make the best Prime Minister. And ultimately, that proved to be a much more reliable guide to the final result than the kind of classic voting intention polls.
So in a way, the Tories can't quite decide if they want Joe Swinson to have a platform or not.
Exactly. Well, in their ideal world, and this is why it's not going to happen.
Get it just right.
She has a platform in Remain world. In the Labour seats that the Tories are trying to pick up, Remainers are thinking, yeah, I'm going to vote for Joe Swinson because she is the true Remainer who wants to revoke Article 50. While as in Lib Dem Tory marginals, they think, oh, it's really a choice of Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, this is one of the problems, which is because you're kind of trying to play, you know, you're trying to play multiple games of chess at the same time. It's quite hard to make the right move in each and every one of them.
However, there are some initial signs of, I suppose, encouragement from the Tory point of view. And that's because we've heard a lot about electoral pacts and this sense that the Lib Dems and Labour might not stand in various seats or at least run an aggressive campaign. Now, one thing that has upset quite a few pro-EU Labour activists is if you look at the seat of Canterbury. Rosie Duffield holds that seat, yet the Lib Dems are standing a candidate in Tim Walker for the Lib Dems. And I've seen quite a few people bring this up and say, given that the current MP voted for or has said they're in favour of people's vote, also known as the second referendum, why would the Lib Dems do that? Because it's such a tight Tory Labour marginal. Just, you know, a handful of votes to the Lib Dems could mean that the Tories managed to grab it. Do you think things like that are what the Tories hope to see?
Yeah, the Tory hope is that the Remain vote splits, allowing them to win back seats such as Canterbury without actually having to increase their own vote or even their own vote to go down. You know, another example of that might be Norwich North, where Chloe Smith is defending her seat. Labour are very, very close to her and almost took the seat from her in 2017. But what some Tories hope is that they can hold that seat because the Lib Dem vote will go up there as, you know, Remain voters in that seat vote for the Lib Dems as the kind of purer option on Brexit, and that might help them to hang on. So I think we're going to see lots, you know, again, the first past the post system in the British system is essentially predicated on the idea that this is a two-party system. Whenever it stops being that, then things get a lot more complicated. And I think that one of the issues in this election is that people are, because everyone thinks that things are in flux, people are more reluctant to stand down for the other party, and tactical voting is more difficult because, you know, we've already had these kind of the row of the Lib Dem bar charts, which is some people say, oh, look at the 2017 election. It's clear that Labour are the best place, Remain party here. Other Lib Dems like to say, oh, look at the 2019 European elections. We're clearly the best place, Remain party now. Now, obviously, a European election is not the same as a general election, but I think, you know, you'll see a lot of those arguments. And I thought Boris Johnson was never going to do a pact with Nigel Farage, but I also thought one of the practical problems with that was the Brexit party thought that they were, based on the European election results, were the best place Leave party in all of these seats, right? And that's part of the tension is, you know, how are you working out who is actually best placed to win those seats?
Now, one of the things I've been hearing from a mix of MPs, actually, from various parties, is that if you look at things so far, there's a sense that Labour are actually leading news agenda in the sense that the NHS is repeatedly coming up. And that is in the context, even though the Tories have a reply of Labour, which they did when Jeremy Corbyn held his event last week, but Labour saying that a UK-US trade deal would put the NHS under threat. You had today Jonathan Ashworth, the shadow health secretary, making various claims about cancelled operations and pointing to stats on the Today programme. And it does seem to some that although the Tories are responding very swiftly, they don't have the lead here in the sense that they're not controlling the narrative. James, is that because ultimately from the Conservatives' point of view, the campaign hasn't properly started yet? Because I speak to some ministers who say, well, we're waiting for Parliament to dissolve itself and then we'll be out all guns blazing. Or is it actually that the Tories are a bit on the back foot?
I think there is an element of governmentitis going on here, which is, you know, that they are still thinking in that mindset of, well, Parliament dissolves the very wee hours of Wednesday morning and that's when the campaign starts. In reality, as soon as Boris Johnson won that vote on holding a general election, that was when the campaign started. I think the Tories will need to show a bit more energy this week, and I think also on the NHS, you know, you can play a good defensive game. But I used to use this analogy until people told me that they've changed the rules of volleyball since I was at school, so it's no longer true. But in the old rules of volleyball, you used to be able to only score points on your own serve. And I think that is kind of true. So however quickly the Tories are moving to rebut Labour stuff on the NHS, when it's not their message coming first, then I think it's hard. Then it is a damage limitation exercise rather than anything else.
Now, we spoke to Eleanor Lang on the earlier podcast today, and since then, Lindsay Hoyle has been elected as the new Speaker of the House of Commons. James, he was the favourite going into this, and in the first round, he won a considerable part of the vote, so it's clear that he was emerging as almost the invincible candidate. What can we expect from him in terms of the next Parliament? He has already been Deputy Speaker, so I think MPs know what they are getting to some degree.
Yes, I was talking to one Conservative voter from earlier and he just said, look, you know, Chris Bryant says all this stuff about being different from John Bercow. Lindsay Hoyle's already done it. He's proved it. I mean, there is a feeling that Lindsay Hoyle is, he has authority in the chamber, but he inserts himself into the action far less than John Bercow did. I think we're not going to get the running commentary that we got from John Bercow. I think he's also going to be a more conventional speaker in terms of the judgments he comes to. I also think, you know, it might seem a bit odd that this Parliament is electing a speaker who will sit in the chair in this Parliament for all of 24 hours before Parliament breaks up. But there is a reason Lindsay Hoyle wanted this election now. He's kind of worked, he's popular in the Commons, and he's worked the Commons very hard to build up support. And I think also, you know, the Commons, the Tories certainly didn't want another John Bercow. And I even think some on the opposition benches felt that they could do with a change in the chair. And Lindsay Hoyle represents that change.
Thanks, James, and thanks for listening. Do join us again tomorrow for the latest twists and turns.